Okay. We have completed the executive section. It's approximately 2:45, and just for the record, that's the first time we've guessed the right time ever since I've been here for the closing executive session. The public has been invited back to the room. The minutes will show the executive session adjourned at 2:45. Once again, the public has been invited to return to the meeting room. We're now back in open session. If there are any motions, they need to be handled immediately. So if anyone has any motions, now would be the time to offer them up. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any motions?
I don't.
Commissioner Crispin, do you have any motions?
I think we should just... I think someone probably needs a moment to get here.
Okay.
It's outside the
room. You'd like 1 minute administrative hold? Okay. So while we're here, you know, back in open session, Alana, we were talking about the attorneys. We should talk about that, too, because I don't know how that it'll play out with how much value added as another attorney is to this at this point.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're now back in open session. The public has been invited back into the room. And I believe Commissioner Crispin has a motion for us. So.
I do, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission authorize the licensing director to execute a settlement agreement regarding trust assets, and once the settlement is fully executed, file the report and recommendation of trustee with district court, together with the corresponding motion to approve settlement, adopt report and recommendation, require deposit of bond proceeds, approve payments, and discharge trustee and related documents. I further move that once the report and recommendation is finally approved by the district court, the licensing director be authorized to distribute the trust fund proceeds to pay valid cash claims and credit sale contract indemnity fund proceeds to pay 80% of valid credit sale claims as soon as possible in Anderson Seed Company Incorporated Grain Warehouse Insolvency Case Number GE-12-78.
Second.
This, Mr. Chairman, is the culmination of this case that I guess I didn't even write down when it, I think it was early 2012 when it came to the commission, before Commissioner Fedorchak or my time here. And ended up with some significant losses by some producers. And we have worked to try our best to put as much possible into our trust fund and then also use our indemnity fund for the contract cases and make these farmers as whole as possible. And I think that our team with Sue Richter and Tim Erdman and Mike McNamee and of course Alana and our contract attorney have done a great job, and I think what we accomplish here is among valid claimants, we're talking about some $809,000 of credit sale claims. And, of course, the indemnity fund should reimburse 80% on those. And there's $2.233 million of cash sale claims. And with the bond and what the small amount of seed that we were able to capture and sell, and then this settlement, we will have a trust fund totaling some $965,000, which will bring those cash claimants up to 43%. And of course, you know, 100% is always what one strives for, and anytime someone doesn't get all their money, you know, that's not good, no doubt about it. However, I think that the choice that we have here to keep fighting and turning over more stones and trying to find more money can drag things on for a really, really long time. And it's important that things do get settled and that people can move on. And I don't believe that it's likely that we would do better than this. And I think it's the best settlement that we can get, and it allows the farmers to recoup as much as is possible and move on.
Okay. I just would echo the same thing, Randy. Appreciate the work that John and Tim and Sue and Alana have done. These things are never—they're never clean. And they just, given the scenario, I think that this turned out to be perhaps the best for everyone all the way around. And just whatever lessons we can learn in this going forward, we'll certainly adapt. But I just think good work wrapping this thing up to this point, and I'm looking forward to voting for this.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since you're none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Okay, I believe that concludes our special meeting. We've wrapped it. Esther, we have four documents to sign. Correct. We don't have to sign the settlement agreement. Sue will take care of all that, but we have two orders to sign. So what we'll do is we'll open it up for questions. Unless I don't have any closing comments. Randy, do you have any closing comments before we questions?
I guess my only really closing comments is my ongoing effort to educate our producers. And so, I mean, this is a case, and I'm talking about cases in general. Sure. and not specifically this one. But first of all, when it comes to a case where there is an insolvency, this took too long. And I think we continue to learn from these things and try and find ways to close these more quickly, hopefully, in the future. But it is a long, drawn-out process. And like with so many other things in life, I always think it's more important that you do things really well than it is to do things really fast. So despite the fact that I do want to try and move these along more quickly in the future, I do think that how well it's done is the most important thing. And I think that this is the best settlement that we could possibly get. I think that the last thing that I want to leave producers with, if any of them are listening or if it gets reported and they read or hear about these things, is when someone is getting ready to sell their product, they really ought to be asking themselves, will I have my money before that grain or seed is out of the possession of the licensed grain buyer? And if the answer is probably not, you probably ought to really be thinking hard about making that deal. Because if that grain is out of state or out of the possession of a licensed grain buyer, the Public Service Commission does not have a lot of resources with which to try to make you whole. There may be a bond. If it's not a licensed buyer, there's not a bond. But the bond typically is nowhere near enough. We rely on being able to capture that grain or those seeds to be able to make people whole when things go bad. And so I hope that just using this as an opportunity to one more time reach out to producers to always be thinking about that. If this money doesn't come to me, where is that seed going to be by the time I notify the Public Service Commission?
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Building off of Randy's comments, I think that this case, and it's the first big one for me as a commissioner, but it does reveal some of the elements of our law that perhaps need to be relooked at again and see if our current licensing and bonding mechanisms are relevant and adequate for modern day farming practices. And so I look forward to working with that. I know it's been looked at before. I think it needs to be looked at again. I'm not saying that we'll find any great new solutions to this, but I think that we've got to keep trying, because this is this was a tough case for a lot of people. And I hope that we can do better in the future.
Thank you, Julie.
And my last thing, because it doesn't have to do with really the case so much, but our staff, once again, and I just want to commend them. I think Sue is tired of seeing me darken her door for the latest reports. Our inspection team with Mike McNamee and Tim Erdman do a great job. I know Tim put tons of time into this. And in discussion with our attorneys, I heard comments about how well written his report was and clear and understandable. And I just hats off to our team.
Sure. Well, just I guess my thoughts final is that, you know, this weekend, ironically enough, you've got the North Dakota Farmers Union Convention is up in Minot. You have the North Dakota Farm Bureau's convention right here in town in Bismarck. And I think that all the grower groups need to really talk about this, because there's a perception out there to farmers that they're protected all the way to the nth degree, and that's not the case. We've had the discussion about bonding levels, and we need to continue that discussion, but you raise the state's bond so high, you drive them to a federal bond. You raise the state bond so high, the smaller elevators get pushed out of business, so nobody wants to raise bond rates. But then when you have challenges like this, your jurisdiction, we don't have jurisdiction outside of North Dakota, and even in some assets, the banks can get things different. So there's a lot of nuances of these cases, but I think it's really incumbent upon what Randy said is the education awareness of the young and old farmers and ranchers of what kind of deals they're dealing and understanding the world that they live in, because it changes all the time. So, okay, that would be all that I'd have. I'd be happy. We'll close the special meeting, and we'd open up if there's any questions from anyone in the audience.
Is there anyone else?
Sometimes they have questions for us.
So I'm interested in the math of the thing as far as, so this is a, yeah, I know you were interested in acquiring $1.5 million from the company. It's essentially Legumex that you're looking at in this case, correct? Or is it Anderson?
I'll let Randy answer these, his portfolio.
Well, we have a settlement that brings $685,000, and that's being added to the bond and to the seed proceeds.
Yeah. My question is, so you essentially, this was an action to try to acquire $1.5 million worth of seed asset value from somebody, and it was, would it have been from Legumex or from Anderson?
If you want me to answer, we investigated all of the avenues of potential recovery and eventually reached a settlement for an amount that we thought was a reasonable evaluation of our litigation risks.
All right. So where does this money then come from now?
The money comes from... my suggestion first is that you'd look at the report and notice, because the report and notice, and I believe it's paragraph 17, describes the settlement and where the payments are coming from. That's my suggestion. I think that's the easiest way to look at how that potential litigation was resolved.
So you can't say whether it's coming from Legumex or Anderson or some combination thereof?
I think the report and recommendation answers your question, is what I'm saying. I don't want to confuse it with something that's inconsistent with our representation of the court, because I don't articulate it well. I mean we've laid it out very well in paragraph 17 of the report and note recommendation. So I mean when that's filed, you'll be able to see exactly where it's coming from.
So you're afraid you can't articulate that?
Well, I can read it to you if you'd like.
I haven't had a chance to study it. I've just been invited into the room moments ago, so I thought maybe
sure.
The lawyer that did the negotiation might be able to summarize that it's a combination of two parties, but apparently that's difficult for you.
Well, I would interject just on behalf. I mean, the sometimes settlement agreements, that's the onus of a settlement agreement is the company has agreed to a certain amount and they've figured out how they're going to put those resources together.
Yeah, I'm saying so, which company?
Well, that's, I think, read through the settlement agreement, and I don't know that it'll be laid out A, B, C, D, E.
And so the amount is a percentage of the $1.5 million is the 600 and... 85,000, is that right?
That's correct.
And so at this point, then, what happens then? This gets recommended to the court on what date then?
January 6th.
January 6th?
Well, it'll get filed today if we get okay. that done. We believe we have a hearing scheduled for January 6th. There's a required statutory hearing, and we got a date of January 6th for that hearing. And that's kind of laid out in here. When you have time to read through it, you'll see that.
And then what happens if then it's a court decision whether they accept it or not, and then it's what role do farmers or our creditors have in deciding whether they choose to accept this, or is that their role to do that?
Producers or claimants can file, well, anyone can file an objection. I don't know if another creditor would have standing, though. Can file an objection, and that if they're going to file an objection, it has to be filed at least 10 days before that January 6th date.
10 days before?
Yes.
And then...
And so served on the commission and the surety and the... And
so
the
then if they choose to accept it, then it's accepted. If it's not, then what happens then?
If someone objects, they file that in writing and come to that hearing. And depending on the nature of the objection, different things could happen at the hearing. There might be a little bit of evidence about a claim. There might just be an argument, some kind of a legal argument made. So it depends on what that objection is, and no one will know that until, you know, filed, which could go as late as 10 days before the hearing.
And, Michael, the producers that have claims filed will get a letter on this. They'll get the packet that explains, you know, like the one that always comes to my mind, there were some that, you know, filed a claim, but then their claim was for one amount, but there's like a sunflower checkoff kind of thing, and so it wasn't fully accepted. All that explanation will be in there, you know, right down to the penny of what this finding would reimburse them.
So do they have, and so they have their individual claims based on their particular case, but do they have an option to object based on, we just don't think this is enough money?
Yes.
They
have that option.
They've done many things, right?
They have that option. And
then there's if they should do that, is it a thing that one of the many claimants can do, or do they have to object on a group basis in order to make something like that have any effect?
I won't speak for a judge, but I would expect one can make that claim. It's going to depend on proving that we did not do enough, or the commission proving that we did do enough to make that settlement reasonable.
We've seen other venues, though, if sometimes the groups will get together and they'll think it'll bring out more bearing for, but the judge seems like they kind of go through and look at each case on its own merit, so it's really hard to predict. But I think the big thing is that this is a big step forward for the commission today and the company. There's a settlement agreement that's now on the table. The judge has a date coming up that he or she is going to look at it. The people involved are going to get a piece of paper that says what this resolution looks like, and if they're happy with it, then they'll maybe come support it. If they're not happy with it, they'll have their chance. But it's so hard to get all these cats herded the same direction that today was a big step. And so that's the part that I made. I don't want to lose sight of that, that the work that everyone did to get to this is very, very complex given all the different jurisdictions, all the different players involved, and the sooner that these things materialize themselves and the sooner we can react to get to this kind of point, I think is a lesson I'll take away from this, that you get to that point where you have probably the 80-85% solution and you could spend all your time trying to get to 90 and you're not going to get there. We had a solution like this a few months ago that was a little bit less than this. We spent a lot of time to get this a little bit bigger, if you will, and that's what you have to back and look at, is that once these operations don't go the way as planned, how quickly can we get involved? How quickly can we get something where we can have a decision to then get some money back in the producer's pocket and also get those groups that are involved to understand that it's not just a layup when they sell something. They've got to be involved in who they're selling and all the way through. So.
Yes. I'm only asking these questions because,
sure.
because as I've talked to people that are involved in this and represent those people, they've, you know, conjectured about what a settlement might mean and whether they might be
absolutely
intend to object based on whether the final amount settled is close or they have never specified what the amount or percentage might be. So I'm simply asking
sure.
what their basis of requesting well, this, if they should want that. I'm not trying to.
Yep. But I'm just
undermine the,
yeah,
the fact that
I don't
done
think
something.
It's
I'm just asking
right.
what the next.
But it's not so much. That'll have to flush itself out with what the judge says, and each person, I think, will bear itself. It's really hard to speculate what they may or may not do. But I'm confident that the attorneys, that the staff involved, everyone has done a thorough job of developing a strong settlement agreement that the judge will look favorably on.
I think it might be helpful for Mikkel if one of the attorneys would walk through the judge's options and then what happens after that. Like if he can approve it, he can deny it, and you know what happens in those scenarios next.
John, do you want to do that, or do you want me to do
I can certainly do that. And if a producer objects and is successful, one of the things we've specifically asked the court to do is approve the settlement agreement. If the producer is successful in establishing that the settlement interest is not in the best interest of the producers, the settlement agreement specifically provides that we go back to square one and that all litigation is back on the table. So, you know, everyone involved in the resolution is well aware that if the court does not approve it, we're back to square one. Now, another thing that I think is important to note is that when you do take a look at the report and notice form, you'll discover that
before you go on, just to understand the sequence of it. So we're hearing the fact that 10 days before the hearing on January 6th, a producer can decide to object to the proposed settlement. So it isn't that. Essentially, the judge is deciding whether to approve it based on these potential objections in the first place. It isn't that the judge approves it and then people object. The judge includes the objections before they even decide to approve it, correct?
That's correct.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, not a problem at all, and I think an additional as you will discover when you have an opportunity. I realize that you haven't had an opportunity to review the report and recommendation, but when you do, I think you'll also discover that the commission has the right to initiate litigation against Anderson Seed Company in the event that they feel there has not been an accurate disclosure of net worth. So there are several triggers which may set aside the resolution.
So you don't feel like you yet know what their net worth or their worth is? Is that it, or is that?
No, we feel comfortable with what their net worth is. If for some reason it were not accurately represented, and we have no reason to believe that it hasn't been, but if there were something that indicates that it was not accurately disclosed, we have a right to set aside the settlement agreement with respect to Anderson Seed Company.
And to understand, for me, I've always been kind of on the mindset that this is something that this is money or value you've been attempting to reacquire from a Legumex Walker who bought the seed out of this company. And the question was whether they did it in the normal or ordinary course of business or whatever the term of art is there. And then if they hadn't done it in the normal course of business, then that money should come back to the farmers, or the creditors. Is that the right way to understand this?
That's one defense that a purchaser of the seed would have. Other defenses are that if it's outside the state of North Dakota, the statutory liens don't apply. So your summary of the buyer in the ordinary course of business is accurate, but it's not the only defense.
I just wanted to mention, when you say creditors, we're talking about grain sales here. Or
yes.
Not other types of creditors.
Right. We're talking about grain sales. Yeah. And I guess maybe this is my ignorance here, but you have been appointed to the bench. Are you then in that area district where this would be considered? And I presume you would not be hearing this, correct?
The answer to your question is no. And even if I were, I would not be hearing it.
Right. No, you're not in that district, or you're...
That's correct.
Okay, then.
This will be filed in Cass County.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Michael, if I could, I mean, I'm really glad you came by here today, and I would look forward to coming by to more of our meetings and more of our work sessions, because one of the things that I think we constantly struggle with is getting the word out to people what really goes on in the process. And it's a very complicated, intricate process, and trying to get someone to help us spread the word, you know, good and bad, is really critical. And so, I mean, if you go through this, if you have any questions for any of us, I mean, we need to maybe sit down and have more direct conversation with you as time goes on, because I think back to the way we, you know, with all the complex energy issues we're dealing with, whether it's a rate case or others, there's, you know, certain reporters that we'll spend more time with because that kind of tends to be their energy beat or things. So I would certainly look forward to more of those discussions, because I know that it's, I don't know, I presume sometimes it gets frustrating trying to get the right word when you've got three commissioners trying to deal with complex jurisdictional issues with a case in front of you. But I think there's ways that we can always walk through the process to do that, and some of the things we're doing on the other side to help reduce the chance of these things happening again.
Well, I have actually done quite a lot of reporting on this particular thing, as I did on the Wimbledon grain thing, which created...
But not direct conversation with us, though. I know that a lot of it is from others, and maybe that's something that I can speak for myself, that I think that perhaps that we should engage in a little more direct, is to get some of our insight as these things unfold, because...
You're welcome.
It's always
a legal process.
It's a balance, though, that, you know, we don't want to... You have a question, we try to hide behind it's a pending case. There's things we can talk about in process, especially the portfolio holders have a larger play in some of this. So... I would sure welcome that, I think.
But for boiling down for his readers, there's a hearing scheduled on January 6th, and that would be the opportunity for them to come forward and express support or opposition to this settlement. And then the judge will take that under consideration and make his ruling.
It sounds like they have to make those objections. Is it within 10 days before, right?
Yes. You have to know what you're going to defend against. If there's an objection. So, yes.
So they can show
support,
up.
They can show up.
Yeah.
Right? Am I right?
Would they be asked to speak at that hearing? No?
I don't know that if a person sat in an audience and had not made an objection or some formal filing that they would be asked to speak.
No, but if they filed.
If they were filing an objection, either pro se or with an attorney, then they would be making a presentation.
But they will have a good notice, and the process for filing an objection, I believe, is laid out in there, correct?
Yep, number three
so
and
if,
four are the key.
So if they choose to file an objection, they will certainly have that opportunity.
Okay, anything else for the whole team here, Michael? Any other questions? No?
Me.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John, for joining us in, and we'll go ahead and officially close the special meeting. Thank you.
Have a good day, folks.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John, for everything.